Good morning and welcome to The Business of Living, the show that brings you strategies and practical solutions for managing your life and career. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella. Now, as you know, this show over the months has covered a broad range of topics that impact our lives, everything from relationships to finance, health, wellness, career, all that good stuff, all those things that are so important when it comes to quality of life. However, there's probably, in my own view anyway, the most important aspect in terms of managing our life and the quality of our life has to do with faith and spirituality. It's not something we talk about much, especially in a public forum. Of course, this is not a religious or a faith-based program on the one hand. On the other hand, as many of you probably do know, interesting, there have been a number of surveys that have taken place regarding faith in America over the years. And consistently, the surveys indicate that anywhere between 75 and 90% of Americans have a belief system. They have a belief in something, in a higher power, in God, in something bigger and outside of themselves. And then, of course, leave that up to each individual listener as to how that might be realized in their own life. So I think every now and then it is good to revisit this idea of faith, and in a public forum, and especially in light of the rapid approach of Easter. We're just in the final days of Lent. Today happens to be Holy Thursday, a very holy day, of course, for Christians. And when I think of Lent, it's a time of fasting and prayer and almsgiving, and that's what many, many people have dedicated the past 6 weeks to doing. I also think about this idea of conversion, which is again, in my view, I'm not a theologian, as you all probably know. I'm not even going to pretend to try to be that. But it's very much about conversion, and I think part and parcel with the idea of conversion is the idea of service. So joining us today is Leah Darrow, and from America's Next Top Model to Catholic Speaker, Leah's journey and faith has been a battle at times. Even in the years prior to her reality TV fame, her Catholic faith took a backseat role. That all changed during one special photo shoot in which God allowed her to see her soul in its current state. This extraordinary and supernatural grace gave her the courage to change every aspect of her life, her friends, her beliefs, her clothes, and her opinion of the world and herself. Here to speak about her own personal conversion experience is Leah. Leah, thank you for joining us. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, Leah, actually, that little bit of an introduction, I believe I took right off your website. I wanted to make sure that I gave it all justice. But I'm very much intrigued with this, your conversion experience. And I know, what you're all about is much more than just that. But maybe just starting with that, and maybe as a little bit of a backdrop, could you please tell me a little bit about yourself? And then I'd love to hear more about that conversion experience.
Sure. Well, I was born and raised actually in Oklahoma in a very good Catholic family. They're very faithful, very devout. We did things like, obviously, we would go to Mass every Sunday. We actually said the rosary every night together as a family, and those were things that were really important to us. And so we prayed every night together as a family, and that was really instrumental in helping me later on in life go back to prayer and go back to God and go back to, the faith of my childhood. And so but I was raised in a really great family. I'm very, very lucky. I have a mom and dad who love me very much and were trying their best to do the best for us. My mom stayed home and took care of all of us six kids. I'm the oldest of six.
Oh, my God. Oh, well, I'm not the oldest, but I'm one of seven. So it's a handful.
It is. I was a handful in general, but yes, having six is a handful, definitely. My mother is a saint. So my mother worked there at home with all of us, and my father, he had his job, and he worked there. And so it was, in some ways, very normal, very, very average, and things like that. We grew up on a farm in Oklahoma, so we were able to be a little bit away from everybody else, and that definitely has its benefits. And then it was towards high school. It was really, high school was a pretty defining moment for me where things started to change in terms of how I saw relationships and boys and all those things. And my family moved from Oklahoma to St. Louis in the middle of my high school years. And it was during that time when when this thing started to change, you know, I wasn't quite sure exactly what I should do, what I should agree with my friends or stand up to. You definitely always want, you want to be liked, you want people to like you and all that other stuff. So all those pressures kind of came down. And in high school is when I started to make some poor decisions about relationships, about the relationships I was in and even being in a relationship. You know, I know it sounds crazy, but I think it's just really too young to be in a relationship in high school. I think you should really enjoy it. I've heard this before from a high school girl, and she said that, you know, high school is a time for you to find your bridesmaid, not your husband.
Oh, I love that. I love that quote. Now, so high school, you know, 9th through 12th grade, and I've got two teenage kids. Actually, my daughter she'll be 18 in July, so she's a senior in high school right now. But and the fact that you were a contestant, I guess if that's the right word, on America's Top Model, at some point you had to become aware of, you know, your body and your physical appearance was changing. Did that factor in? Did that, you know, because obviously people are also reacting to what they see on the outside, yeah?
I mean, of course, yes, people do react to what they see, but I did not have much of a... I didn't pay attention much to that type of stuff. I mean, and I think when other people paid attention to my exterior, it kind of surprised me. I'm like, what? I didn't see anything, you know, different than anybody else, really. So I didn't really start paying attention to that in terms of those things until probably later on in college.
Okay, that's interesting. So here you are in high school, and even with the, you know, saying prayers together as a family, saying the rosary every night, and I don't want to use words that you're not using, but maybe a little bit of a drifting away and an attention on different things. Would that be a fair statement?
It's more of a slow fade. You don't grow mm-hmm. up and you don't wake up and have horns and breathe fire overnight. It takes a
right.
long time to do that. And so, it was just small things. I mean, I loved God. I loved to pray. That didn't bother me. I mean, granted, of course, as a kid, you always think you could do something better than having, say, the family rosary with your family. But,
right.
but at the same time, I mean, like, it didn't, I wasn't completely resistant to it, and I really did love God. I thought about God a lot, actually, about my relationship with Him, where I was curious about God, about what does He do, what does this mean, and stuff like that. However, I think what helped me in my slow fade away from my Catholic faith was just the pressure from others and not being courageous enough to stand up and say, this is what I believe. And I think part of that has to do a little bit with not having the right... A little bit has to do with not having the right information and catechesis and understanding of it. I mean, keeping in mind, when I was in Catholic school, when I was in these Christian schools, like theology of the body that we understand today and know of today, mm-hmm. That was not around. Now, it's true that Blessed John Paul II had already written some of those things, most of them, in fact, but they weren't really out for the public, and it wasn't really being digested or even broken down later on, as it has by many others. So... You know, without those types of things and kind of helping also with my parents understand some things, it helped with the slow fade to understand, like, what is my purpose? What is, who am I? What does this have to do? What does my body do? What is the gift of virginity? What is purity all about? What is holiness? And so these big questions that I think hopefully most of us adults are asking of ourselves, as a kid and as a young kid, it's one of those things that are, you don't really grasp right away. All these things led to my slow fade and kind of allowed me to I still held on to the fact that I was Catholic. I still held on to the fact that I was a good person.
Mm-hmm.
However, later on in my years and after college, things were definitely not right. I mean, my moral compass was not pointing, you know, due north.
Okay.
So, and that kind of just brought me more into after college. After I graduated with a degree in psychology, graduated with honors, and after college, I saw a few minutes of a TV show called America's Next Top Model. And I'm a little spontaneous, so I just thought, oh, that looks really fun. Maybe I'll try out for that. Maybe I'll just do that. Who knows? And that's exactly what happened. I did.
So then take us through that experience.
Well, the experience of America's Next Top Model, or
that experience, and then leading up to, and I believe it was afterwards when you went in more into modeling, the conversion that you had experienced.
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm sure most people understand this, but just to make the statement, just to be redundant, but there's rarely anything real about reality TV. Granted, there are no scripts. That's true. But with the editing that goes on in reality TV, what is presented to the public is something so distorted. And that's exactly what I found out to be true in my show, as it is with many, in fact, almost all shows. Now, granted, Tyra's nice, absolutely, of course, but there are some major problems with that show and with many shows like this. And in my personal opinion, I really think that reality TV showcases human brokenness.
I think that's... go ahead.
Yeah. We are putting people on display on TV, and granted, yes, we did sign up for it. No one twists our arm necessarily, but we're filming them in such vulnerable ways, in such vulnerable human conditions, and then we're putting it on TV, and we're letting people, you know, eat their popcorn as they watch TV, and we become people's entertainment. Our brokenness becomes entertainment. Sin becomes a joke. Sin becomes entertainment.
No, I think that's really interesting, because I'm not a TV watcher, but my wife and my kids, they like to watch some of those shows, American Idol, Dancing with the Stars, and then, of course, The Biggest Loser. And I always wonder about that, too, because many people will defend, for instance, The Biggest Loser by saying, well, you know, they're doing people a lot of good. They're raising the awareness of obesity. They are, and people are actually, you know, they are changing their lives. But I've actually been somewhat skeptical on those, and I don't know the behind the scenes like you would. So it's interesting and actually somewhat encouraging to hear you say that, because I don't think it's necessarily, this is a controversial statement, but I don't think it's necessarily doing us a service as a society.
I absolutely agree. I mean, I would freely make that statement. Reality TV is doing nothing of a service to us in terms of what we're watching on TV and what we're putting into our brains. Now, granted, there are varying degrees. Shows like The Biggest Loser versus America's Next Top Model is a pretty wide range in between what they're offering, what they're doing, and how they showcase people. And The Biggest Loser, I think, does it as best as they can. I think a show like that is a lot better. However, the problem is that, once again, we are allowing other people to become our entertainment in very broken ways, people who are exposing brokenness, and we are watching this. And it depends on, are we watching with compassion? Are we watching with, you know, being non-judgmental? Or are we watching, looking at them, saying, well, at least I don't look like that, or
I didn't do that. That's the problem.
I
see it also as a little bit of a form of voyeurism, just looking into, and I guess, you know, in human nature, you want to, I don't know, it's like driving by an accident scene, right? And just people need to kind of stop and stretch their necks and gawk and things like that.
I mean, you could even absolutely go further. I mean, Facebook is one of the biggest voyeuristic, you know, social media outlets out there. I mean, I'm on Facebook, I know, but it's crazy when you can look through a friend of a friend's vacation pictures and they don't even know it.
That's
just a little odd to me. But yeah, so these things go on, and that's kind of like the issue with reality TV once again. And I think that, you know, reality TV is it's not just TV. I think we have to make sure that we are looking at the fact that magazines like People Magazine and Us Weekly and things like that, that once again show people, show broken, you know, marriages, relationships, pregnancies, out of wedlock, all these things on the pages that we just flip and turn, and we are just we're aiding in the problem. So many people boycott a certain brand of coffee or food because they give money to an organization that they disagree with. However, we have no problem putting money towards the media and the paparazzi that are, number one, getting way too close and into people's lives than they should, and two, not helping us in terms of helping, you know, keeping us in the sense of curiosity of looking at them. And then what ends up happening inevitably is us having a distorted image and view of what happiness is for us. Oh, I wish I could be like them, or I wish I could look like them. I wish I could have that much money, or whatever it is. And all these things aid together. They're all very, you know, connected, and we kind of need to kind of see it.
Yeah. No, and many of the participants are either looking for their 15 minutes of fame, or they're in a vulnerables kind of a situation. They may be somewhat naive, and I think that there's maybe a little bit of exploitation of that. So you moved on from America's Next Top Model, and you went into modeling. Was it full-time, Leah?
I did. I was on Top Model, was eliminated from Top Model, moved to New York right away, decided I was going to still do it, still going to try and make it. So I did that. And when I did that, that's when I started modeling full time really trying to get as many jobs as I could. And that's what I did. And that's what happened. I ended up getting some modeling jobs here and there. And it got down to this one. I get a phone call from an international magazine, and they call me and they just said, hey, we'd love to have you have it in a shoot. They saw me on Top Model. They thought that they could help me. I said, okay, great. How can you help me? You know? And they said, well, we would love to put you in this part of the magazine, and it would showcase you in a very sexy way, very sultry way. And since you kind of have that girl next door look, we can help you out by, you know, beefing up your portfolio, showing these different looks and everything. So this is how they're going to, quote, help me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, for me, from where I was at that point in my life, I said, absolutely. I was very steeped in the culture. I was very steeped in, like, okay, I want to be pretty. I want to make money. I think it'd be fun to be a model. It'd be great. And I really, and especially being in the TV show and afterwards, I really fed into the whole vanity and pride issue.
On the outside, it seems like a great lifestyle for many people.
Absolutely, and from the outside, it does look like that, but that's the problem. It's like a mosaic. From the outside, it looks like it's all one piece and perfectly good. And you get up close, and you realize you see all of the distortions, all the tiny pieces that are not really cohesive, all the things that look like they could be together, but they're not together. And that's the problem with that type of lifestyle.
So here's your big opportunity, and you're getting ready to do the shoot. Yeah.
And, you know, that's the moment of grace. I mean, it was really a St. Paul moment that God really blessed me with. And in that moment, I was taking the pictures, and the photographer was taking snapping the pictures over and over. And then at that point, one of the pictures, just like this, the flash came across my face, and it was really bright. And so I was trying to blink to regain my focus. And as I was blinking to regain my focus, I just saw this. I was fully conscious and aware, but I saw like a little picture of myself. Kind of, I think, is pretty similar, like when that happens to anybody, when you blink, and sometimes the last image that you see, it still is flashing
exactly
in your mind.
Exactly, sure.
And that was exactly what happened, but I just saw myself in the outfit that I was wearing, which was an immodest outfit. And whenever you're thinking of anything, you know, what the world especially views as sexy, you're definitely not thinking modest. So it was an immodest outfit I'm wearing. I see myself in that immodest outfit. And I kept blinking, thinking, I didn't think it was too weird, but I just kept blinking, trying to regain my focus. But as I kept doing that, I saw myself, and I saw myself with my hands cupped together at my waist and then raising them all the way up as if I was giving them, you know, to someone. And I didn't see anything. I didn't see God or angels, nothing like that. Mm. But the only thing I did see at the end of this is when I raised my hands up was an image. It was a profile of a man's face. It was just a profile, a shadowy profile of a man's face who was looking at my hand, what I was offering. And then he bowed his head in disappointment. And that's all I saw. That was it. And once I saw that, though, I remember feeling very scared, and I pulled my hands back down to see what was in them, and they were completely empty. There was nothing in them. And I just kind of, after that, the photographer was saying, Leah, come on, stay focused. And I just said, I kind of looked at him, and I realized I wasn't quite sure what had happened. I wasn't quite sure, like, what was going on, but I just realized I was offering nothing to God. That everything that I was doing in my life, everything, was only for me. And I was living a life by the theology of Leah Darrow, not by the theology of the Roman Catholic Church, which I believe in. But I was wanting to do, you know, I made adjustments in my life because of my behaviors. Well, I know the church says this, but I'm living with my boyfriend, and I'm sure he'll love me and be with me forever, so it'll be okay. And so I made, and that's just one few example, but I had so many of these adjustments in my life to justify my behaviors. And so in the moment of that photo shoot, I realized it wasn't just fashion. It wasn't just modeling. It was my whole life. It was totally centered on myself. And I just couldn't do that anymore. And in fact, to be honest with you, I was exhausted. I never would tell anybody that. I wanted to always tell people that I was happy and everything was fine. But I was exhausted. I was exhausted living in sin. I was exhausted always, you know, feeling like everything just wasn't quite right. And I was away from the church for such a long time. I refused to go to confession. I was embarrassed. I was scared. Sometimes if I would even go to Mass, I didn't know what to do with communion. Should I receive? Should I not receive? And so for me, those were really scary parts for me in my life, and I didn't know what to do. And so at the moment of that photo shoot, it was everything. You know, it combined everything in my life. And so I told the photographer, I have to go. I can't do this anymore.
Unbelievable. Now, were you on? Usually you sign a contract. Was a contract signed where they expected you to, where you had a, you know, more or less a legal obligation to do the shoot, or was that not part of the picture, that not even a factor?
There was a contract signed for non-compete, that I wouldn't compete with them, that I wouldn't work within a year for other magazines that they competed with.
Okay, but nothing that said you had to, it would force you to
correct.
Actually go through with the shoot. So in a minute, we're gonna take a break, but I do want to just say this, that what I find really remarkable, you mentioned St. Paul, and I think most everybody knows the conversion story of from Saul to St. Paul, that he completely caught unaware, you know, wasn't something he was looking for, wasn't something he was thinking about. And I think about you, in that, you know, here you are in a photo shoot. I would think the last thing on your mind is, you know, is your faith and your commitment and where your loyalties were. So I think that's what really strikes me as being incredibly remarkable is it wasn't something that you were necessarily looking for, and yet there it was, right?
Absolutely. Definitely was not looking for it.
So when we come back from our break, I'd love to hear more about, okay, so you had this, what I think is an extraordinary experience and a miraculous experience. And then, of course, as I said at the introduction of the show, my own view is when, and whether it's conversion in the sense of a St. Paul conversion, your type of conversion, you know, big C or little C, some people experience maybe mini conversions, these little God winks or nudges that we get. I think that there is an obligation, my view, an obligation to heed the call and to serve. So I would like to hear, as we wind down the rest of the show, a little bit more about your dedication to serving the call that you had received on that day. We'll be right back. You're listening to Scott Ventrella on the Business of Living Show. We're speaking with Leah Darrow, and back in a minute. Thank you.
My name is Erica, and I swim for my best friend, Brooke.
Hi, I'm Paige, and I swim for my sister.
My name's Julie, and I'm swimming for my uncle.
Hi, my name is Brooke, and I'm swimming for myself.
My name is Nina, and I swim for my friend's mom.
The 6th annual Swim Across America Greenwich to Stanford Swim takes place Saturday, June 30th, and is making waves in the fight against cancer. Come join the fun and swim with Olympic, professional, and recreational swimmers in Long Island Sound. Swimmers of all ages and abilities are welcome. Boaters, kayakers, and land volunteers are welcome too. 100% of all funds raised by the annual Swim Across America event go towards cancer research through the Alliance for Cancer Gene Therapy, the nation's only nonprofit dedicated exclusively to funding innovative cancer gene therapy research. Swim Across America Greenwich to Stanford Swim takes place Saturday, June 30th. To register, visit www.swimacrossamerica.org and click on the Greenwich Stanford Swim link.
We swim for a cure!
Welcome back. You're listening to The Business of Living. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella. We've been speaking with Leah Darrow, former model, now international Christian speaker. Fascinating story that I can go on and on. I just love to learn so much more about this. But we are down to our last couple of minutes. Leah, so now let's talk a little bit about service and how you've dedicated your life in serving that call you received on that fateful day.
Yeah, well, of course, after walking out of the photo shoot when everything happened, I did the only thing a girl can do. I called my dad, and he drove over 2,000 miles to pick me back up, and he took me to church, and I was able to reconcile myself with God. And then from there, it was, of course, a long process, you know, many years of just, you know, reformatting, rehabbing my life, you know, and taking up a stance on purity, on chastity, on holiness, on conversion. And so God has blessed me, you know, so much, and he has given me the opportunity to, in a sense, work for him full time. And so now I've dedicated my life speaking all over the world. And helping people realize their call to holiness and the fact that they can change. Never let anybody tell you you can't change. And so that's what I do now.
So here's what I think is amazing, though. Now, remember, you've been living a certain lifestyle, and you have friends and maybe older friends, but then the new friends you picked up along the way. And whether or not you were in a romantic relationship, dating or whatever. But how did you so now you come back a different person. What do you tell them? Do you continue to hang out with them, or, you know, what was the message back to them?
Well, a lot of those friendships that I had back in New York, I left in New York. They did not. We did not follow up and stay up with one another, which kind of shows you just, you know, what friendship is really about. And so I made a lot of new friends. And then the friends that I had from my past that did catch up with me, I let them know, like, this is where I'm at now. This is what I'm going to do. And some of those friendships had to end. Because they were leading a life that was not in alignment with my views. And our friendship was just clashing so much because it was so personal to both of us. It was personal for them to live that way, and it was personal for me to live this way according to God. And so we just, you know, in a sense, just gave each other our love and said goodbye.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So God's blessed me with a whole bunch of new friends now, friends that are in the same view that I had, that carry the same view in terms of wanting to do the work of God, to do the will of God in their daily life. They come from all ranges of faiths and walks of life, but everybody has the common mission to do good. And so I'm very blessed to have all of those people around me.
Now, my understanding is you have a new DVD, is that correct, from Top Model to Role Model?
I do, yeah. I probably should have rethought the topic or the title of it, because I'm definitely not the epitome of the role model, but God has definitely used me for many examples of that.
You're very modest. Now we're aspiring role models, right? We're works in progress.
We are working out our salvation. Yes, absolutely.
Well, Leah, thank you so much for joining the show. I wish you and yours a very happy Easter. We've been speaking with Leah Darrow, former model, now international Christian speaker. You are listening to the Business of Living show. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella. Please join us again next week, where we'll be continuing to have our discussion on managing your life and career. Thank you for joining me. We'll see you next time around.